This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild. Welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now download off our webpage at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have as my guest the one and only Al Franken, pioneer of Air America and the author most recently of The Truth with Jokes. Al Franken, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks. Thank you.
I had the pleasure of talking to you about 2 months before you launched Air America.
Right.
What's your assessment of how you've done?
Well, we had that shock sort of right out of the gate about 3 weeks in. We had been told by the original chairman of the board that we had enough capital to go 3 years before we started making money, and it really turned out to be 3 weeks. He was not telling us the truth, and as a result, we ran into trouble right away.
Did you think you were going to sink?
I thought it was a possibility. I did think that we'd have to get through one ratings period and see, and I felt in my bones that we were going to do well. And that's what happened is that you can imagine after we had started with six stations or something like that and lost two of them essentially right away, and two of the big, Chicago and LA. I felt like we could probably hang on if the ratings were good for the other four stations that remain. And that takes, as you know, in radio, 4 months, essentially. It takes the 3 months of the quarter plus a month, really, to get the numbers to get out. And I felt that all I could do was just do good shows. Now, there was a lot of drama going on about people stepping in and keeping the shows going by paying people and that kind of paying the people who needed to be paid. I stopped getting paid at that point. But I don't know, for some reason, and it was really my ass on the line in a way because I was so much the poster boy for the network. But I just said, okay, well, you know, I can't regret something I did for the right reason, and I'll just keep doing the best show I can. And, you know, you can understand that no affiliate is going to want to sign on to an organization, you know, to a network that's just basically gone broke. So what happened was the first ratings came out and they were very good. And that bought us time and it bought us further affiliates. And real heroes came in and saved the network by putting money into it. And since then, there's been some ups and downs, mainly up, and mainly in terms of adding audience and adding stations. We're now to 75 stations or so.
Now, how'd you get started with it? I mean, did someone come to you and say, look at the progressives are getting beat up, liberals are getting
beat
up?
Well, I mean, I knew that.
Or did you?
I knew that. Somebody approached me and said, these guys, the Drobnys in Chicago, are thinking of trying to put this thing together, and you should talk to them. And then someone else talked to me from Infinity, and I mean, all about the same time. And that started as I was beginning to write Lies and Lying Liars. And after I wrote Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot, a number of people came to me and said, you should do this. And I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to spend 3 hours of my day, every day, on radio and all the preparation that would take, et cetera. I didn't want my life to be consumed by doing a show. By the time Lies and Lying Liars came around, and a large part of it, of the book, was about debunking the myth of a liberal mainstream media, and looking at the right-wing media, I started to realize that somebody had to do this. And there's a Gallup poll that says that 22% of Americans get most of their news from talk radio. And I just felt like this is you know, it's such a monolithic world out there. It's all right-wing talk radio. Somebody's got to do it. And I kind of felt like I was, it almost fell to me. I mean, not to
because it was put up or shut up.
Well, it was put up or shut up. It was also like, you know, well, Michael Moore's not going to do it. He's making these films, you know. Who's going to do it? Who's going to be the guy to do it? And I sort of felt like I had the tools to do it. And I didn't know anyone else who would do it who did have the tools to do it. Let's put it that way. So I said, well, it's got to be done. So I'll do it. And I only signed up for a year, and that was like something that people said, oh, he's only going to sign up for the election. I signed up for a year because I frankly didn't know if I was going to like it enough to keep doing it.
Did you think about not doing it after Kerry lost?
No. I had no. By that time, we were building. I felt like if we had not had that thing happen at the beginning, we could have been more helpful. And I felt like, you know, I felt that Air America was more important than ever.
And you feel that way still.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite thing about doing the show?
Well, my favorite there's different favorite things. The show is a mixture, and the mixture changes every day of content, of humor, of interaction, like personal interaction with the guests, of emotion, sometime of passion, and I like all of those things. I like doing the comedy. I like hearing great content and substance, and there's an inner wonk that I like that comes out. I like that on the show things can actually become emotional sometimes. And I like being passionate and sometimes even angry.
How do you, it's Matt Rothschild listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking, of course, with Al Franken of Air America. You impress me as Ralph Nader does and some other people like Nat Hentoff, and that you can just dip right in kind of to that well of indignation. Is it just right below the surface, or do you have to really dig to get it? I mean, these days with Bush, I suppose it's not that hard.
There are certain things that are, you know, that I can go to that can make me indignant pretty quickly. I mean, the way we've done the war in Iraq gets me indignant.
Well, let's talk about the Iraq war a little bit. You, in Lying Liars, mentioned that you were for the war at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that, why you were in favor of it, and what you would do now if you knew what was going on back then.
Well, I was in favor of it in a certain way. I wasn't like 100% gung-ho for the war, and I don't know if I would have been for the kind of almost unilateral war that we did, but I certainly would have. Because I'll tell you why. I actually believe Colin Powell. I actually believe that there is a presumption I had that the White House and the administration wouldn't lie to us. Really, it's as simple as that. So I felt like, okay, well, they have ties to Al-Qaeda, and they are working on a nuclear bomb, and, 9/11 was fresh enough. And
so they pulled the wool over even someone as
smart
and jaded as Al Franken.
Yeah.
And you write about that in this book, how they did it.
Especially Colin Powell. That really, to me, to this day.
Have you ever talked to him about it?
No, and I've asked him to come on the show. He hasn't come on. I mean, he's had the good grace at least to, I believe, apologize. I think that's what he's done. And the other guys don't do that.
Well, it's a sense of right or wrong to apologize. And some of these guys, Cheney seems bereft of conscience.
Well, what he's been saying lately is unconscionable. The idea of, like, you know, saying that we lied us into war is the most reprehensible thing I've ever heard. I mean, like, who's he kidding? Come on. I mean, give it up. You misled us into the war. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You can go chapter and verse. How about when Cheney, when you said there's no doubt that Saddam possesses stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction that he intends to use against his neighbors and against us. I mean, that the no doubt is kind of the operative phrase there. No doubt means something. It means there's no doubt. You know, Bush saying that Al-Qaeda had received training and weapons of, you know, biological and chemical weapons from Iraq, when it turns out, we found out like a month ago, that the Defense Intelligence Agency had told the NSC that that was fabricated. It was almost certainly fabricated.
Now, are these guys just pathological, or they just think it's all a game? Well, they believe their own stuff.
I don't know. I mean, they must believe it's all a game. They must believe that, I guess, after playing it as a game for so long, you must believe everything's a game and you can do everything that same way. And, you know, it's first that politics is a game and running a campaign is a game, and, you know, you can't do good for people unless you win, therefore you have to play the game of winning. And then after that, you know, you can't lead people where you want them to go unless you play the game of leading them where you want to go, and then suddenly you're lying us into war.
Yeah, it just seems...
That's the kindest thing I can think.
I mean,
and that's not so
What's
kind.
The meanest?
Well, the meanest thing is that they're just, you know, really awful, cynical people who are don't believe that the American people are entitled to know the truth, that they know best, that they are willing to lie to people. And I think that's probably closer to the truth.
I'm afraid you're right about that, Al Franken. The show right now is Progressive Radio. I'm wondering about what you think we should do about Iraq right now. At the end of your latest book, The Truth with Jokes, you are ambivalent.
I am, and I still am, and I wish I had an answer. You know, every day I'll like read Wesley Clark's piece today in the New York Times op-ed section, and he's basically saying we have to pay much more attention to Iran than we've been paying. And I think he's right in one respect, which is it's like we invaded Iraq and the winner was Iran. I saw Cindy Sheehan came to our show in Dallas the other day. And she wasn't a guest. She just came for about a half an hour. And during a break, she came up to the stage and we talked. And I guess she listens to the show because she knows how ambivalent I am. And I am not for withdrawing as fast as we can. I said, that's easy for me to say. I don't have any skin in the game. And, you know, she has a picture of her son on a button that she wears. And she said, well, we all have skin in the game. And she said, I know you're not there yet. We have to talk. And she said, but I know you're a compassionate man. And she hugged me. And, I mean, it was very moving to me. One of the reasons I go on these USO tours is to connect with the reality of it. Not that I know the reality of it by doing a USO tour. You're pretty cocooned into, you know, these military bases and... but I do as much reading as I can to augment that experience. But part of the connection that I get is with the troops. And you know, the last thing I want is somebody to be the last guy to die for a mistake. But on the other hand, I think that maybe leaving preemptively, just leaving, might be sort of the perfect end to a perfectly done bad war. Just it might be exactly like, wow, we did everything wrong, you know. That's my worry.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is that if we're at the point that John Murtha says we are, that it's lost, and there's no way that the United States is going to, you know, vanquish the insurgents there, and then you are just sending more soldiers to die in vain, one after another.
Well, vanquish the insurgents, is that what we need to do? Is that possible to do?
Well, it's the Pentagon plan strategy for
victory. I know, nothing short of complete victory. But is it, are any of these things even possible? Is it possible to establish an Iraqi military? Is such a thing, could such a thing exist without, factions, without militias? I don't know. The people who I trust say completely different things. I mean, people like Peter Galbraith says basically let them divide into three, nation states. Wesley Clark today was saying, no, don't do that. every day I have a different wrinkle on it, but the big grand question is, I suppose if you can't find a way to make it work, you've got to leave. I mean, that's it. And it's sort of like there are two positions, leave or don't leave.
Are you planning on getting Cindy Sheehan on? Has she been on your show?
She hasn't, but I'd like to have her on. I was very, very impressed with her. I would love to have her on.
It's Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with Al Franken, of course, of Air America. You know, I listen to Air America quite a bit, mm-hmm. your show and Laura Flanders sometimes, and some of the other guests. And I'm just wondering, overall, other than putting out radio that people listen to, what the objective is. Because sometimes I think with your show, it's entertaining, it's informative, and it is kind of for a general audience. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the way I edit the Progressive magazine. I want someone who's, somewhat knowledgeable about current affairs and concerned about the fate of the country to be able to pick up the magazine and read it without being a card-carrying lefty. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing for people listening to your show. On the other hand, there are some hosts on the network who I think are so shrill that they are just preaching to the converted at most, if not even turning off some of the converted.
Yeah, well, I try not to... I don't have control over the programming on the network, and I try not to get overly involved in that because that, I think, would lead me to insanity. So I tend to really just focus on what I'm doing.
And so, how would you characterize the mission of your show, then?
The mission of my show is basically to be an advocate for a point of view and bring as many people to that point of view as I can. And also people that already share that point of view to give them to give them ammunition and to exhort them to work harder and be more passionate about these very, very important issues that are just going to affect us and our children and our grandchildren.
I'm with you on your critique of the Bush administration. Sometimes I think you go too easy on the Democrats, mm-hmm. on Bill Clinton, who I think for the welfare reform bill and some of his crime death penalty stuff and the sanctions on Iraq doesn't deserve praise. And Kerry, too, though I enjoyed your bit in this latest book, The Truth with Jokes, you're writing about Kerry as though he's and Teresa are looking over your shoulder. At one point, you call him Bush's bitch, I think. And then say, I hope he's not looking over my shoulder.
That's when he's left the room. I think that the welfare reform bill, which finally and ultimately passed, was a mixed thing, but in a large part of success. And it's hard to judge completely because the economy expanded so much that people were able to get jobs. I also think that he set the stage for it by increasing the earned income tax credit so that people could move from welfare to work and that work could mean something. But it doesn't mean enough because the minimum wage hasn't been increased enough, and that there's been a downward pressure on wages at the bottom too.
And if those who can't find jobs and they've reached the limit of their wealth, 5 year or 2 year, depending on the state.
Well, there are ways that they create exceptions for that. And I don't think that has been the rule at all. I think the main story of it is that, you know, the main tragic story of it is that people go from welfare to work and it doesn't necessarily make their lives better. And that shouldn't be. I mean, we should really reward people for working. We also shouldn't make single mothers work as many hours as they're now. They want to increase the number of hours they're made to work, and
almost as soon as the baby's born.
Too. Well, yeah, and it's crazy because we're sending opposite messages. We're supposed to say that, you know, parenting is the most important thing you do, and on the other hand, you've got to work 40 hours a week if you're a single mother, or we'll take away your welfare. So it's, you know, which is it, guys? You know, do you want kids with mothers at home, or do you want you want them in daycare or nowhere or latchkey kids? I mean, it's that we haven't done that. We don't do anything particularly right here.
What is the most important improvement that you see necessary here in the United States, L. Franken?
What
reform? I mean, you talk about universal health care, for instance, is in the last chapter of your book.
Yeah, I think universal health care is sort of the most immediate need in the sense that when I took the job, I said, I want to use this as a learning experience. So I'm going to do 3 hours a day on the radio. I might as well learn something while I'm doing it. And I've listened to other talk show hosts. It doesn't seem like they learn too much. And that's why I have as many guests as I have and try to do as much reading as I do. One thing I've learned is that healthcare is so at the center of everything. A child that does not have health insurance is less likely to go to school. A child that doesn't have health insurance that gets an ear infection is 70% less likely to be treated for it. Healthcare is at the center of bankruptcy. 50% of people who go bankrupt is because of a healthcare crisis in the family. Healthcare is affecting these corporations defaulting or altering reducing the pensions. It's affecting the bottom line on companies like GM, who operate at a disadvantage because they are now not only in the business of making cars, but in the business of providing health care. And I think that's why we're going to have a tipping point, which is that businesses want to be in the business of flying people around the country and not providing health care, or building auto parts and not providing health care. And I think that businesses are going to be the ones who are going to force universal health care to happen. Well,
I thought it would have happened a long time ago. The only automaker who was out front on this issue that I remember is Lee Iacocca from about 15 years ago was for universal health care. But it's been a while. He's just doing commercials for the company now. I don't see their current executives lobbying for universal health care. What's it going to take? You know, Hillary care didn't work because that was a hodgepodge. It wasn't even universal health care.
Yeah, well, it was close to universal. I mean, ironically, it was a hodgepodge that really the basis of it was you get your insurance at work. And I think that, you know, 100 years from now, we may say we dodged a bullet on Hillary care, and single payer universal is what is the only thing that really makes sense.
It's Progressive Radio you're listening to. I'm talking to Al Franken of Air America Radio. How long do you expect to continue to do radio?
Well, it sort of depends. We're moving back to Minnesota, and we're going to be doing the show from there through 2006. into 2007, and I have a decision to make about whether I might run for the Senate.
The last chapter of your book, The Truth With Jokes, suggests that you are going to be senator in 2008. You're writing,
looking backward. Yeah,
it's
a letter written to my grandchildren 10 years from now, in 2015, and I really don't know if I'm going to have, you know, three grandchildren named Barack, Hillary, and Joe the Third. And I don't know whether I'm going to run or not. But I say in the book that I don't make the decision until 2007.
Why are you attracted to the possibility, though?
Well, I think that you can do a lot in the Senate. I think that people shouldn't be intimidated from running for office because it's made such a horrible experience. I think that I'd be a really good senator. I think that I could command a lot of attention for the issues that I care about. I think Minnesota deserves a senator that cares about the people of Minnesota and is not the senator from the White House, which is what we've had in Norm Coleman.
Oh, to what extent is your animus toward Norm Coleman driving you into this?
No, it's not. That wasn't animus. That was just simply stating what the political facts are.
Boy, you know, I look at you and I think, wow, I would, if I were Al Franken, I'd be bored to death if I were a senator, sitting in those hearings, listening to those idiot senators prattle on. That doesn't...
That actually interests me tremendously. I mean, I can't think of anything more interesting than serving in the Senate. And I mean, it'd be a real switch. It'd be a real career change. But not, you know, not totally. I've been moving sort of in this direction a little bit. And it would be an interesting way to sort of, I don't know. I think it's, I've always thought public service was tremendously honorable. I think it's becoming less and less so among a certain group of people called this administration and this Congress.
You haven't been afraid of career moves anyway. Toward the end of the book, you write in a hopeful way about the progressive future, that Bush has peaked, that Bush is out of gas, that he's toast. Do you think that's true, or is this guy going to be haunting us till the last minute he's in office?
Well, I mean, you know, he is the president, and he'll haunt us till the last minute he's in office, but I do think he is more or less a lame duck. I think his party is running away from him. Certainly when he'll do a fundraiser for someone, but he won't appear with them as a favor to them. But I also, there's nothing in his agenda to get done that I see. He failed on stuff Social Security was hilarious. The idea that he had a mandate for Social Security was just this. The silliest. Only 5% of those people came out of the exit polls said that Social Security is one of two issues that they voted on, and 80% of those people voted for Kerry.
You debunked the whole theory of a mandate, both for Social Security and a mandate in general, in your latest book, The Truth With Jokes, by Al Franken. Thanks for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Well, thank you. This is fun.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.